You probably already noticed that printed at the top of your bulletin today are the words, Transfiguration of the Lord. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands to find out how many of you came to church today, especially for this celebration of this odd holy day. I'm willing to bet that not one of you received a greeting card this week that said, thinking of you on Transfiguration Day. I bet not one of you was greeted with a box of candy this morning in honor of the season. No call will be forthcoming this afternoon from a friend or relative in another part of the country saying, just wanted to be in touch on Transfiguration Day. Yet here we are. It's Transfiguration Sunday. Every year on the Sunday before the beginning of Lent, the church gathers around this most shining of all the stories in the gospel. Every year we climb the mountain to that special place set apart with Jesus and three of his favorite disciples, Peter, James, and John. And along with them, we are privileged to see beyond and through Jesus' words, his ministry, his acts of kindness and mercy, and come for a moment face to face with his true identity. As Mark's gospel reports, he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became a dazzling white as no one on earth could bleach them. This brilliant whiteness was a sign of the presence of the living God there on the mountain, a stunning display of divine glory. And it came at a critical point in the ministry of Jesus as he turned from the region of Galilee and set his face toward Jerusalem. Just days before, Jesus had announced to his disciples that the path would go in a different direction from what they all expected, that he would go to Jerusalem, where he would suffer many things, be rejected and killed, and after 3 days, rise again. Our Ash Wednesday service this week will serve as a reminder of the serious side of the Christian story. It's no accident that the glory of the Transfiguration precedes the somberness of the days that are to come. As it was for the disciples, the brightness is intended to give us enough light to find our way through the darkness and the challenges that lie ahead. I read not long ago about a pastor on the West Coast who decided that the season of Lent was too much of a downer for his congregation. So he wrote in a newsletter of the church, I think we should start thinking of the word Lent as an acronym. L-E-N-T. Let it stand for Let's Eliminate Negative Thinking. Now, I'm all for positive thinking. But positive thinking cannot be the only arrow in our quiver when we are fighting against forces of darkness that are real in this world. You can think positively all you want to, but that will not do much about the brokenness of the world. Something more than a sunny outlook is needed to overcome the sins of this world. We need a power that comes from another world, the power released into the world in Jesus. And so when we climb the Mount of Transfiguration with Peter, James, and John, and Jesus, and find the curtain pulled back, we see the depth of our need and the strength and Spirit of God fully present in the person of Jesus. And we hear a clear voice speaking from the clouds of confusion and anxiety that wrap themselves around us. And we realize that it is possible to get a glimpse of the love and light that we long for in the here and now. One of my favorite writers, Henry Nouwen, looked on the story of the Transfiguration and saw it as functioning in our tradition much as an icon functions in the Orthodox Church. We're familiar with that term, icon, but we toss it around to refer often to our sports heroes or movie stars or politicians, icons. But in a religious context, an icon is understood to offer access, a sort of gateway into the mystery of the invisible and the ineffable, a way, a visual way of encountering God. There on the mountain, on the Mount of Transfiguration, the familiar face of Jesus, familiar to his friends as a teacher and a healer, became a kind of gateway to a different realm of eternity. They saw into the reality of who Jesus really was, the beloved Son of God. Their ears were open to hear a voice that was not from this world. "This is my Son, the beloved. Listen to him." For one shining moment, they understood, Peter, James, and John, what was real and true and lasting. Several years ago, I encountered the writing of a French mystic named Simone Weil, a very powerful writer. She had a moment of particular glory, a moment of transforming experience as she listened one day to Gregorian chant as she sat in a Catholic mass. And this is what she wrote. "We live in a world of unreality and dreams. And to give up our imaginary position as the center of the universe in the imaginative part of our souls is to awaken to what is real and what is eternal. A transformation takes place at the very roots of our existence. It is a transformation analogous to that which might take place at dusk on a road when we suddenly discern, as a tree, what we first had thought was a stooping man. When we realize that what we thought was the rustling of leaves was really the whispering of voices." She talks about seeing the same things, but in a different way, to wake up to what is most true. And this is what happened to Peter and James and John on the Mount of Transfiguration. They woke up to what was real. And it was terrifying to them at first. You can imagine how these three who were former fishermen, whose lives had been mostly a matter of mending nets, would react to seeing Jesus in this new light. I wonder if you've ever had the experience in which the scales fell off your eyes, and you saw someone who was in your life on a regular basis in an entirely new and different way. Like that coworker who constantly annoys you, or the family member who drives you crazy. And then all of a sudden you look at him, you look at her, and you see the person that he is. You see the beauty of her spirit, the promise of their future, the tenderness of their existence. And in that moment, you are changed. That's the kind of thing that is possible by the grace of God in this world. You become alive in a new way, and you see life and other people with new eyes. No wonder the disciples wanted to savor this moment to see with those new eyes forever and ever. Peter said, "Let's build three dwellings here on the mountain. Let's freeze the picture frame right here and stay here forever to enjoy this moment. Jesus, you can have one. Elijah will build a dwelling for you, and Moses, the great liberator and lawgiver, will make a dwelling for you as well. Nothing will have to change. We can stay here on the mountaintop forever." But this was not to be. Moments of high drama and grandeur and glory are blessings in our lives, but the real work is yet to be done down the mountain in places where people suffer and long for hope. But here's the great thing about mountaintop experiences. After you have had one, you live in the world, down in the valley in a different way. You see the promises of God coming true. You see the same things. You're connected to the same people, but your eyes are different, and your ears are different, and your heart is different. I thank God for those surprising moments when you and I just get it. Get something that we did not get before. And it's not that we make a willful choice to see things in a different way. It's that through the power of the Spirit of the living God, we're given a glimpse of something that is more real, and our outlook is transformed. For many years, I thought that the point of ministry, or one of them, was to speak in a prophetic voice, to call people to righteousness, to urge people along the path of discipleship. But I'm beginning to see, however imperfectly, that through the grace of God, we're all sinners in need of grace. I want to help people to see that our shared humanity as children of God is more important than all the things that would cause us to have disdain for one another. Through the power of God, transformation can happen. We can see different things. We can hear different things. We can hope different things. Sometimes, as a church, we are tempted to see only through the eyes of survival. Will we make it? Will we have enough? Enough money, enough people? But this day reminds us that God is giving us a new way to see. We are hearing in a new way the voices of our neighbors calling us to mission, into collaboration and partnership. We can be changed. We can look at things differently. How are we going to act in the world? How is our faith connected with what we do? How do we bear witness to the power of God Monday through Saturday? The promise of the Transfiguration is nothing less than this, that the future for which we hope and dream is available to us now. We can only have eyes to see it. It's available to the church. It's available to each one of us. I don't know whether anyone here has ever felt a sense of lostness or lack of direction. You wonder, where do I go next? What do I do? And then the day comes when you know what it is that you need to do. And you find the courage in your soul, given somehow to you by God, and you do it. You can't imagine why you didn't see it before. That's the kind of transforming power that is released when God comes near. Transcendent love from the high heavenly places breaks in upon us, and there it is, our life shining with possibility through the power of God. Now, it's true, the disciples had to climb a mountain, and mountains are steep and difficult to climb, but the promise is this, that if we do our part, God will be waiting, and God will do God's part, and we will see things that we have never seen before. We will realize the true value of what we have not valued before, and we will be released from our own notions of what can and cannot be. Will Willimon, the longtime dean of Duke University Chapel, tells a story about a boyhood friend of his, who in his adult life ended up hitting bottom. He had been a prestigious attorney, and he had fallen into the depths of alcohol addiction. One Saturday night, he was arrested on an interstate highway for driving the wrong way. The good news is that he got back on his feet. Thanks to a loving spouse and children and the good work of AA. Among the many things that surprised him, though, was that the major highway back to life was the church. He had always gone to church, but like many smart, well-educated people, he had considered himself a step or two above it all. To take faith seriously was the kind of thing that other people did. Church was for people who needed a crutch. Later, reflecting on how the church had been his pathway to recovery, the man said, "You'd be amazed at what I learned at church." "Like what?" a friend asked. "Well, I've learned a lot about God. I've learned the meaning of so many words that I had heard all my life, and there they were being said again. And like a flash of lightning, they became real for me. Words you could think of as little Christian slogans, but they were suddenly amazingly deep and real and true." Like you can only find your life by losing it. Like take up your cross and follow me. Words like that. I live on them now, he said. On the Mount of Transfiguration, a voice from the clouds says, "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him." His are words of life. In him is the power to transform the world and to change each one of us. On this Transfiguration Sunday, may it be so. May it be so.